pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. Friday is finally Friday. 251-343-0106. If you need to be in touch with the program, all you got to do is text me. Let me know what's on your mind. Coming up on the program today, we do every Friday, Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News. Capital Journal will be with us in about a half hour. Carolyn Dobson, gonna give her some time on the program. She has wrapped up the Republican nod for Test Secretary of State. Now she has a Democrat opponent. I need to do a better job at knowing who these down ballot opponents are, for the Democrat side, other than Doug Jones and Philip Ensler, and I don't even know who the Senate is. Wes Everett? Everett West? Also coming up on the program, our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott, who I'm sure is going to weigh in on the toll. Yeah. So our friends at Al, not a big fan of the way we at 1819 News categorize this toll. $7.70 each way. They really wanted to sell the discounted rate of an Algo Pass, which is going to be just a hassle. Because here's the deal: like, even if you have like a transponder, if you have like a Sun Pass or one from another state, they're still going to charge you the full fare. The Algo Pass, you're going to have to get separate. What if I go through the toll? Who's going to get dinged for the cost of this? I don't know. It's going to be a mess. We have to have multiple transponders on our cars. Because Florida is not that far away, where there's toll bridges that you may or may not use. And they got all the dignitaries needed to endorse this idea. Very excited about this. You're going to see this, and I suspect we'll hear this later in the show. You're going to hear from people who just, we just got to get the bridge done, and we're going to praise Donald Trump for cutting the red tape. What a great job he's done. And, well, what about the toll? Yeah, but what about the federal money we're getting for this? It's not hard here. No one's going to be thinking, okay, this bridge is $2 billion, and we're getting this percentage from the federal government. No one's thinking about that. All they're thinking about is when they pull up to this bridge and they see a $7.70 price tag. That's it. It's not hard. Like I said, pretty simple. You could try to highlight all the positives and all the nuance about it, but nope, not going to work. This is very narrow what we're going to look at here. Not looking at the bottom line price tag, not looking at all the bells and whistles, not thinking about any of that. You're just going to pull up there and you're going to say, wow, this is almost $8 to cross. And then I got to pay another $8 to come back across. 251-343-0106 is the text line, by the way. 2031 completion, I am very skeptical of that. Although, you never know. The way they built the West Alabama corridor. But there'll be weather delays and other problems that were unforeseen. Of a project of this magnitude, rarely is it finished on time. if it were an emergency situation post-hurricane and traffic were having to be rerouted, if for whatever reason the Wallace tunnels had to be shut down, you'd see an expedited effort. So anyway, I'm still curious to hear the fallout now that it's had a day, well, a little less than a day, 22 hours to marinate. If that's something people have had time to consider, are you okay with it? There might be some of you out there who are like, you know what? This is something we feel unnecessary evil. And Sean and I were talking about this on the handover yesterday. Just be upfront with us. Don't try to dress this up with a MAGA hat. Don't do that. Look, just say, look, okay, this is what it's going to be in 2031. This is why. This is how we had to do it. The whiteboard, as Sean called it. Just be straight. Don't get cute with it. Don't try to turn it into something like a you know, some kind of conservative versus liberal thing, thinking you could cater to the people who are going to be most likely to bring the pitchforks and torches. Don't do that. Just be upfront. Just say, hey, look, this is terrible. Not for this, tolls. I don't like tolls, but the only way you gotta get this ever fixed, unless you want to wait till the next hurricane, is if we do it this way. And this is why the sticker shock is so much. But look, you'll have remedies here. You'll be able to do this at a much lower cost as a local resident. And I'm not crazy about this whole idea that we got to bilk the tourists or the people, commuters passing through. That's just such a, that's just what they do in liberal blue states. Like I said, you go from Washington, D.C. up Interstate 95 to New York City, and you're paying a toll in Delaware. You're probably going to pay a toll in, I guess, around Baltimore if you use some of the roads. But then you get to Delaware. Then you get Pennsylvania, crossing the bridge there through Philadelphia. Maybe you go around Philadelphia. Then when you get to New Jersey, you're on the turnpike. There's another toll. Then if you're going through the tunnel or across one of the bridges over the Hudson River, you'll pay another toll there. This is what they do up there in the Mid-Atlantic states. They do it in New England states. This is what we're doing in Alabama. Because you're not stopping in Wilmington unless you're stopping at the groundbreaking for the Joe Biden Presidential Museum or something. I wonder what that's going to be like. This is what they do in northern states. They hit you. They know you're just passing through. They know you're not going to stop. You're not going down to Rehoboth Beach or something. Who's using our highways and paying, stopping to get gas is just not sufficient enough, because we got to take those gas tax dollars and move them to build West Alabama corridors or bridge remediation in Blount County or something. (251) 343-0106. The other big story yesterday, and not a lot of chatter about it. I can't figure out why. Our left-wing establishment media in Alabama was just screaming about Tommy Tuberville being a Florida man, and they lost in Montgomery County Court yesterday. Very blue county, Democrat judge Brooke Reed. They lost. It's going to get appealed to the Alabama Supreme Court, but they're going to lose there. The residency challenge. This is not an issue for the courts. I don't care what Joyce Vance says that her pseudoscience about the law. Who's wrong about everything? If she was right about anything, Donald Trump would have been in Siberia by now at a prison camp. Tommy Tuberville is a resident citizen of Alabama for 7 years. The criteria may not be what you would like it to be, but he is, and he meets the qualifications. And the legislature's got to find this to be the case if it goes that far. And somebody will probably try. But if you think you're supermajority, he's going to beat Doug Jones. Have you seen any polls lately? So if you don't, if you think this is over, want to go after him on donating his salary to veterans groups or whatever, fine. But you've lost some credibility here because no one believed that this was such a stretch to begin with. We looked at this. We asked experts like probate judges about this question about 7 years and what it means to be a resident citizen. And there was just no there. He checked a bunch of boxes. It's like when you are an out-of-state student and you want to get in-state tuition, you have to live here for so long. There's all these things you got to do to check the box and be eligible for in-state tuition. And Coach had done a lot of that. And he's been eligible for 7 years. I mean, there's all these like legal precedents, like residents, like you can have multiple residences. Does he go to Florida a lot? Yeah. Does he go to Florida more than I would like? Probably. Well, we can't get a beach house in Orange Beach, but guess what? He can still go to Florida and be a resident of Alabama. 251-343-0106. But that, like I said, the credibility is lost here because these guys, they really just like hammered this, and acted like they were on this righteous crusade. And even the courts were like, no, this isn't really the place we're going to argue this. This isn't what the Constitution says. This isn't how you handle it. Went through the Alabama Republican Party. He had double jeopardy. He had to face it twice with the Republican Party Steering Committee. Beat it both times. We have our candidates on a Republican ballot. Republican voters overwhelmingly picked Tommy Tuberville to represent them in November. Wasn't even close. So there it is. Let's see here. Iran continues to be a problem. Real quick. Price of crude oil was down a little bit, $71 a barrel. So the market seems to be shrugging a lot of this off. Maybe they feel better about the Strait of Hormuz and the safety there. But we can talk about that later in the program. Stick around. This is the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Carry on, sweet southern comfort, carry on.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. Let's see here. Democrat nominee is Wayne Rogers, chair of the Jefferson County Democrats. he does like a lot of PR for Sheriff Petway or something. Two pieces of garbage peas in a piece of garbage pod. Well, that's not going to go well, I predict, for Wayne Rogers. Just pay the toll, lying white privilege. Ultra Runner, I reject the idea that tolls are required. The $2.2 billion portion of the projects covered by tolls is close to ALDOT's budget for a single year. A 30-year loan at 5% interest rate would cost about $40 million a year, 7% of their budget. Mobile and Baldwin County generate 20% of the state's revenue. We're not worthy of 7% of their budget. We're simply getting screwed. I agree. It's just, this has never been a priority in Montgomery. It's been a problem. I mean, guys, the BP oil spill. They put all this money into the port because the business community wanted it, not because the people of South Alabama wanted it. But then they get to check a box and say, well, look what we did for Mobile. Okay. But it's a corporate thing. It's not a South Alabama thing. Let's not kid ourselves. It's going to help the whole state. I remember when they were trying to pass the gas tax in 2019, listening to these lawmakers at the time, and I was in Huntsville, and there were people who just did not like the idea of the top, whatever, skimming the top of the 10% or whatever it was of the gas tax for the port. That there was some constitutional questions that money collected from gas tax revenue was supposed to go toward roads and bridges, not toward waterways. They finagled some kind of legal definition of the waterway as being a roadway. And I think Tom Frederick sued, but it didn't go nowhere. But that was a big business thing. It wasn't a South Alabama thing. Otherwise, it's just a cash cow for the state. It's a piggy bank, maybe not a cash cow. Tim. Yeah, Jeff, I used to hitch my wagon to get a large ice chest. Let's see. I know, Texter. How many cars a year will use the Mobile Bridge as opposed to West Alabama Corridor, yet we had to personally pay for the Mobile Bridge where our gas taxes build a highway to nowhere? They're not gonna toll that, are they? Joel, you got to watch your mouth here. I'm going to skip your text. Derek, rant incoming. Oh, boy. Well, we'll be standing by, Derek. Mike, with a huge portion of Mobile drivers riding around without license plate, the tag readers won't work. It's basically going to be a toll-free for most of Crichton and Pritchard. So anyone who falls on hard times can't afford the tolls. Just put a UJ Chevy Chag on the back and ride around like they do because police don't pull them over. Or no tags. G from LA, people talking like they don't trust the state government and ALDOT after their impressive projects like the OB Bridge, the Non-Express Beach Express, the West Alabama Corridor, debacle, and now the Forever Toll Bridge. Come on, people. Squirrel Vereen. How much Cross Bay community traffic is due to Baldwin County residents absolutely refusing to reside closer to Mobile jobs, or Mobile residents who shop in Baldwin County or can't stand to work with the average crappy Mobile employee? People living in Fairhope have wondered why I have preferred to shop or go to movies over there, and I told them the same reason why they live over there. I live in Fairhope, and I don't go to Mobile that much. I think that's true for a lot of people. I'm sure there's a lot of people who do cross. Billy, we used to have to pay 35 cents to enter the Bacon Tunnel. My brothers and I would fight over who was going to throw the money in the basket. I would gladly pay $3 or $4 to go across the Mobile River instead of waiting in traffic for 30 minutes. No more, yeah, but are you going to pay $8? 251-343-0106. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Got to know when to hold 'em, Know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done.
Every gambler. Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. A lot of text here this morning. We will get to those in due course. Still to come on the program, Carolee Dobson in about an hour. She is the Republican nominee and apparently has a Democrat opponent for Secretary of State. But she'll join us in that 10 o'clock hour. 11 o'clock hour, our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott, will make time for us. So please stay tuned for that. Joining us now on the line, he is the publisher of Alabama Daily News, also the host of Capital Journal. But Todd Stacey is with us now. Todd, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. Well, did you mark yourself safe from Graham Plattner over the week here?
Yeah. Well, I guess the state of Maine can. What a saga that has been. I mean, I guess I'm glad that I don't know. I don't care about other states and how they vote and who. I mean, it's really kind of none of my business. But I'm glad for Lindsay, who I think you also know. And that she was vindicated in all this because she was pretty brave to come out and just tell the truth about who this guy is and how I don't know just how much of a problem he is.
Something you said.
She was vilified. She was absolutely vilified online, and then this other woman saw how she was treated. And then came out and backed her up and said, "Hey, yeah, he raped me," and that's what ended it.
The only thing I know about this guy was how lousy of a bartender he was at Tune In. Not a place because Tom, when I was there, I lived in Virginia. I wasn't working on the Hill. You'd go to the Hill maybe once or twice, or you'd go into the district once or twice. You know, up that in that part of the Hill. And when I worked there. Our offices were over at Farragut Square, they closer to the White House, but like when he did go, I mean, that guy was like, he was just kind of like, now that you say it, he was like the libertarian loudmouth who wanted you to know all about his politics.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, before he tended bar, he was just kind of a bar fly and he would just hang out. That's how I got to know him. That's when he was dating Lindsay. Which nobody liked. That nobody was okay with that, just because of how unhinged he was. But like, yeah, I mean, my old friend Doug Hay on Twitter said, his Twitter video lasted 11 minutes, and that's about how long it would take you to get a beer from from Graham, because he was too busy, talking. Running his mouth to whoever would listen. So yeah, he's just kind of a blowhard, often wrong but never in doubt.
Yeah, he was the bartender, and y'all know this guy. He's probably have encountered people like this in your life, but he thinks he knows a lot of things and he doesn't know anything.
That's right. Often wrong, but never in doubt.
I am kind of impressed he made it that far, as far as he did. That is remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, it's a con job. The whole thing's a con job. I mean, whenever he got in the race, I guess it was last year sometime. Some friends of mine from those days, we're all texting back and forth like, Graham? Really? That guy is going to run for Senate? Like, what in the world? And of course, Lindsay's like, what's he going to do about his Nazi tattoo? In this group text, like, oh, we didn't know that. Obviously, she knew a lot more, but, and then it all came out. And so, it's also just a cautionary tale. Like, you know, a lot's been said online about vetting and all this. Like, the guy just has low character, and obviously he's a charismatic guy. He has this gruff voice. He can convince you of a lot of things, but like at the end of the day, there's just not a lot of character there, and that's always going to come back to bite you. And I think they're figuring that out in Maine. And what's crazy about it, Jeff, is that, you know, this is an election year that favors Democrats, especially in a state like Maine. And so Susan Collins was going to have a tough battle. If Democrats just nominated a normal person, they probably have a pretty good chance of beating Susan Collins. And you know, Janet Mills is the governor of Maine. She's at least popular enough to be elected governor. If they just do that, they probably have a pretty good chance. But they you know, this Democratic Socialists of America group, the way far left progressives, just overreached, and now they're regretting it.
That's sort of a phenomenon in American politics. When you had these populist uprisings, we had this in the Tea Party. I guess people remember like a Sharon Angle type, right?
Yeah,
but
whoever the Delaware girl was, yeah.
Yeah, old Christine O'Donnell, who I knew her too. She wasn't a timber.
She was not a witch.
No, but she was nice, but you could tell there was a short circuit there or something. That's just the nature of these things, that you have this like enthusiasm for these ideologies. And I think this is like, it's kind of on people who like are the ones who are the adults in the room who are capable of holding these offices. And I know this sounds somewhat elitist, but they got to do a better job here of like explaining things and not always just catering to the lowest common denominator in politics. This is what happens. When you do this over and over and over again, there's short-term gain, but in the long term, you're going to create a movement. You got to get people, and they're going to vote for you the first few times, and then they're going to say, well, you're not really doing this socialist progressive stuff we wanted, and they're going to try to go figure it out for themselves.
Well, look, I mean, we know a thing or two about this, because in Alabama, Republicans nominated Roy Moore, and that led to electing Doug Jones. So Republicans, because they overreached, or whatever you want to call that election, it backfired because they got a Democrat elected rather than a Republican. So yeah, Alabama knows a thing or two about this, I wish that parties had a greater role in kind of gatekeeping. And I know that, like you just said, it sounds elitist or whatever, but it's that way for a reason. At least it used to be. And when you see people like Graham Plattner getting nominated and all these other Democratic socialists, Democrats are going to regret this. I think they already are starting to, just as Republicans have had to, you know, how many terms did Republicans just miss out on gaining majorities because
they nominated the wrong person. Yeah. But they do this. Both sides do this. They make all these overtures about these things. And that's like Nancy Pelosi 101. And I mean, maybe deep down she believes a lot of it, but she knows it's not practical. She knows it's not something that's going to make it through a chamber 435 and then go to the upper chamber through. But they still pay lip service. And they don't really explain the nuance, because it's just you're talking to an audience with a very, you know, short attention span, and they feed them this cotton candy, and this is what you get, man. I mean, I don't know an answer to that other than, you know, understand if this is your long-term strategy, maybe you do it in an election or two, but this is like your overarching long-term strategy. This is the net product you're going to get from it.
Yeah, and it's also a proof positive of why if in Alabama we close off the primaries to only those who are registered with parties, only those who are like, yes, I'm a Republican, or yes, I'm a Democrat, like closed primaries would be a bad idea, because you get more nominees that, you know, sound good to the base of the party, but it might have a problem actually winning a general election. And so this is exactly what we're talking about, is exactly why I argued against the whole closed primaries bill and idea, because you need more participation, you know, from the middle of the road types rather than less.
Well, you know, it's different in Alabama because we're such an overwhelming Republican state, but maybe this is true in some other states. You know, like Florida, for example, has gone a little to the right, but they require you to declare Republican or Democrat in primaries. That's like, what, you know, you choose your party and then you're registered for it. I know they do things a little different than what maybe we had wanted to do on that that Ernie Yarborough bill last session. But there's some give and take there, and there's some ways to handle that. I don't think that's going to go away, though. And, you know, you make a cogent argument about what could happen. But to me, there's just this enthusiasm there. And that's the people who are engaged in these elections, and the people who are kind of casually interested. Maybe they vote, they don't register with a party. They're ambivalent about all this.
Yeah, I mean, so if we just had, what, 10% voter turnout, if we want that to keep going down, let's require party registration.
In primaries, for sure. But even, like, I grew up in a house. I grew up in Shelby County. My parents didn't care about the primaries. It was small potatoes, you know? Like, there's a problem there. They were right-wing. My dad listened to Rush Limbaugh, would tell me all about what he said. Had no idea who his congressman was. He couldn't tell me. He didn't know what a Spencer Baucus was. So that's who our congressman was back then. And, you know, I just think that's kind of applicable to the state, where they're very strong in their beliefs, but they're very limited in how much they care about the blow-by-blow in the trenches politics.
Right, and that's the problem, is that the primaries are essentially how we elect our leaders. I mean, a long time ago, it was the Democratic primary, right? You know, go back to Bill Baxley and Charlie Graddick, and how the Democratic Party was in charge back then. If you got elected in the Democratic primary, that was tantamount to election. Now that's the same thing in the Republican primary. And so I want more voters. I want more people deciding these things rather than fewer. Let's... Same thing is going on in Maine. Same thing is going on in Manhattan and Colorado. The Democratic Socialists are taking over that party, and your run-of-the-mill Democrats are freaking out, saying, "Well, what's going on?" Well, they didn't show up to vote because the highly engaged, you know, Democratic Socialists are the ones, you know, actually getting out to vote, and so they're taking over. Well, there's not a Republican that's going to challenge, you know, it's going to have a chance there. And I don't want the same thing to happen on the other way here in Alabama, where, you know, some, you know, right-wing radicals could get elected because they won a primary. You know, well, nobody bothered to show up to vote.
Let's talk about this on a national basis, though. And I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to a Democrat convention. I mean, I'm sure you have. I've been to a couple.
No, I haven't. I wanted to go to Chicago last year, but I didn't get a chance.
I went to one in Boston and one in New York City a long time ago, and I mean, they are the activists. They are the true believers. They are. You know, I don't radical, but progressive, or whatever you want to call them. But I kind of wonder, like, is this? This is something that the Democratic Party has got to deal with, and I wonder what this presidential election cycle is going to look like, because there's this amount of momentum in these big population centers, and I'm sure it's going to be true in other major American cities. Does that bleed over into the presidential politics? Because, you know, we haven't had a competitive Democratic primary since 2008 with Hillary and Obama. You know, does this set us up? We see what's going on in the country. We see what's going on now. Does this transfer 2 years from now when we're in the heat of this thing?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's what they're doing. I think that's what the AOCs and Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are doing. They've had a setback here with Graham Plattner, but that's what they're doing. They're setting up, you know, the 2028 thing. But also what's fascinating about it is in each of these, a key tenet to the Democratic Socialists of America's platform, if you want to call it, is essentially hating Israel. Essentially, I mean, there's a big anti-Semitic, undercurrent to there. Maybe not even an undercurrent. It's pretty overt. And I'm curious to see how, you know, anybody that runs for president on the Democratic ballot is going to have to, you know, call Gaza a genocide, right? Which is not true. It's a lie. And essentially bash Israel. That is a new thing in American politics. And that it's unsettling to me, but like it's going to be like this new shibboleth, this new watchword. And that's going to be fascinating to watch. And I mean, I don't know if it'll matter in terms of if people will reject that, but that's where Democratic politics is going, and that's really unsettling to me.
Yeah, and you know, the only hope for them, I think, is because I think you're right, is if you have a bunch of those candidates, they crowd each other out, then maybe I don't think you get like a Fetterman or anything like that to run, but maybe somebody who's not quite all the way over there could prevail. Especially these early primary states. I don't think this stuff is going to work in New Hampshire or Iowa, but I mean, the Democrats have changed the way they do their nominating process.
That's true. They kind of kicked New Hampshire out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of like New Hampshire going first and even Iowa. But
well, that was the whole design of the system, because you put these swing states up front and it keeps you, you know, if you put Alabama up front or Utah or whatever, you're going to get a more, you know, less of a moderate candidate or whatever. So you take these swing states and you let them set the tempo, and then you battle it out from there.
Yeah, yeah, but they couldn't handle that. They had to get Joe Biden elected.
Yeah, and so it's unfortunate, but that's the way it goes. Hey, Todd, folks want to find you online. They want to check out Capital Journal or Alabama Daily News. How can they do so?
It's really easy. Just go to aldailynews.com. You can enter your name and your email and sign up for the newsletter. And if you don't hear enough from Chris Elliott on the Jeff Poor Show today, you can catch him on Capital Journal, because he's my featured guest tonight. That's 7:30 on Alabama Public Television.
Todd Stacey, ladies and gentlemen. Todd, we always appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
All right, Jeff. Be good.
All right. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Not sure what's going on there, but we'll continue on our merry way. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the show, all you got to do is text me. Hit me up on that text line. Let me know what is on your mind. Still coming up on the program today, Caroline Dobson. She is a candidate for Secretary of State. And in the 11 o'clock hour, State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion, will make time for us, so please stick around for that. Milton, how about a bigger and better tunnel, no height restrictions? I mean, they'd have to lower the floor where you would or bury the tunnel, right? I don't think this day and age, you can't just drop it in sinks where it's supposed to go. I mean, the technology has changed, and those tunnels maybe don't have the shelf life of a bridge. So you want something a little longer. I'm not an engineer, but yeah, I don't think another tunnel or another, I mean, I guess they could build another span to the tunnel, but that doesn't seem like, because all the traffic, Milton, is coming out of, it's going to come out and come back on the Bayway eventually, and it's going to bottleneck. So that's the problem. And they need something on the Bayway with an emergency lane. How often does traffic get stuck on that thing because somebody's car breaks down or whatever? And it was conceived in a way to deal with 1970s traffic, not 2026. Hey, and that's the problem here. Well, the op-ed makes sense now. Brent Coach tried their hardest to the new plan to Trump, tied a new plan to Trump because they knew the toll was going to be unpopular. I don't know it was them. I think they were asked to do that. But that's a discussion for later. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5.